Hello, everyone. Welcome to Zeros TV. I'm Max Wheathy, and I'm joined today by Dan David, the founder of Wolfpack Research. Welcome to the chopping block, Dan.
Thanks, Max. Appreciate being here.
Well, Dan, let's get right into it. Who is up on the block today?
Today, we have a wonderful little morsel for you. A stock called ticker symbol EHE Hang Technologies. They are purportedly a leader in innovative eVTOL, electronic vehicle takeoff and landing technology. They have a fully autonomous, so they say, vehicle that they are bringing to market. They'll be the first one to do this with cutting edge intellectual property and technology that is stored in China. They are the first that I know of listed company on the exchange with many, many more large competitors to join them soon.
Let's talk a little bit about the space because I think it's important to understand, you know, what type of company we're dealing with here. You're not saying that the space is one that needs to be shorted. It's specifically this company within the space. You actually have a pretty bullish view on the eVTOL companies.
Yeah, the eVTOL space is going to be huge. You have very large players in there. Boeing, United just signed with Archer to have 200 delivered in the next few years. General Motors is in there with Cadillac. You've got Joby, who just merged with Uber Elevate. They're a very big number of large players that are coming to market within the next few months, actually. And we're very bullish on some of them, in spite of the fact that, you know, some of them are going to be SPACs. I guess not all SPACs are bad, but this space is going to be huge. The problem is when you look at EHang, who rushed to market, and I understand why they did now, because they're basically a stock promote with largely fabricated sales. They have one customer that we could find who's also a distributor, also a competitor, by the name of Shanghai Kongxin. So we've looked at this customer inside and out, recorded phone calls, on-site visits, interviews with their finance manager, and we basically come to the conclusion that these contracts that EHang has purportedly signed with Kongxin are shams, in that this benefits both parties. Kongxin has an investment pre-IPO into EH, $16 million investment, undisclosed. That investment today, just by the stock price valuation, is worth $50 million. When we go to talk to Kongxin's finance manager, who is the only employee we could find, I mean, first of all, backing up into this, trying to find Kongxin was not easy. They had three listed addresses. One of them was a hotel, which was not Kongxin. One of them was a building, and they reported that they were on the 13th floor of an 11-story building. By the time we actually did find them, we found one employee there, their finance manager, who did nothing but complain about what a terrible product EH has in their EH216. He said, what we found, and we already knew, that it basically can fly for 10 minutes. It's got 30 minutes of battery life by the time you're landing and you're taking off. You know, they had a competing product they said they'd sell us for the same price, and it flies for 4 hours, and we don't want the EH216. And this is their sole distributor, right? And their biggest customer that supposedly bought 128 or has a contract for 128 units of the EH216. Speaking of those contracts, the first contract they signed with EH was what really got our attention. So in February 2019, prior to their IPO, Kongxin supposedly signed a contract for 3 units for a total of 450 million RMB. Now, these things sell for about 1.5 million RMB. So they're paying 100 times more for these 3 units. And then 3 months later, sign up for another 20 units, this time for 30 million RMB, more in line with the pricing. We found this in a draft registration statement prior to their IPO. It's pretty hidden in the Edgar files, but you can still find it. A month after this draft registration statement came out, they filed with the SEC to have the prices redacted, obviously because people looking at this and seeing nobody's going to pay $450 million RMB for 3 units. Now you can't see what their prices are with their one customer, but we can see that this is, you know, obviously a sham contract, in our opinion. You know, prior to Shanghai Kongxin signing or inking this $450 million RMB contract with EHang, they had just been incorporated 9 days earlier with 10 million RMB in registered capital. How do they plan on fulfilling this contract at all when they're a 9-day-old company with 10 million in registered capital? They signed $450 million RMB contract with EH for 3 units, and then further a few months down the road signed another 30 million RMB contract for another 20 units when they only have 10 million in registered capital. It is so dense with so many issues. It's one of the worst stock promotes I've seen even out of China in 10 years.
Yeah, and that contract had some interesting timing when it came in too. It was right before the IPO.
Right. This is all leading up to the IPO, and they collected quite a bit in the third and fourth quarter coming into their IPO, which was in December of 2019. So it looked like, you know, hey, they were collecting on some of these contracts. Since then, in the last year, believe it or not, their accounts receivable have ballooned to 80%. So they claim to have taken in about 25 million US in cash over the last 13, 14 months, but they've only actually collected 3.6 million in cash. So 20% and 80% are in accounts receivable. This makes no sense to us. I mean, you're talking $3.6 million they've collected. They have no profit. So if you're just looking at, price to revenue collected, that's like 900 times where they're trading today. If you look at price to actual revenue reported, say the whole 25 million, including the accounts receivable, we're still looking at like something like 150 to 200 times price today. So it's ridiculously priced and no reason for it, especially once you've taken a look at the factory itself.
Before we get into the factory, though, I want to talk about this accounting, issues that you're bringing up. This isn't the first time this has happened with the company. They had a U.S. subsidiary where similar things happened, and those accounts receivable actually had to be written down and shareholders were left holding the bag.
Yeah, they did. They filed for a bankruptcy in their U.S. Subsidiary prior to their IPO, which is why we think they delayed their IPO in 2019 to December rather than the spring of 2019. And lo and behold, they were able to collect almost nothing on their accounts receivable for that bankruptcy and left the investors with $8.13 in the bank account, literally, to split among them. We see this looking like the same thing.
Yeah, and is this a common tactic that people use to inflate revenues, where they put the revenue out there but they don't actually collect it, and in the time before it's collected, investors get optimistic about that potential?
It's a very common tactic in fraudulent accounting and in a fraudulent company. That's what I found. I mean, look, you see aging accounts receivable. That's one thing. You see accounts receivable that are aging a year and you're only collecting 20%, which looks a lot like the model that what took you bankrupt in your U.S. consumer drone business the year prior. Yeah, it looks like a pattern to us. Especially when we look at the company inside and out, it's just not feasible. And talking to experts about EHang itself, the motors in this product are hobby motors. They're not high tech, technique motors or technical motors that you would expect to be in something that's going to carry passengers autonomously. It doesn't pass the sniff test for any of the experts we spoke to. One, Mark Moore, who was willing to go on the record, worked for NASA for 32 years, and most recently Uber Elevate, and evaluated the EH216 himself and said he didn't find the product to be worthy of carrying passengers. Very dangerous. You look at it just from an eyeball level, and the propellers are like basically at your thigh or your waist walking into. You got 16 propellers surrounding this capsule, and you have to walk through those unguarded to get in or out of this. I mean, you get any kind of false start, or God forbid you're in the air and one of these propellers flies off. It's just a matter of not if, but when. Where's that going to go? It felt like it's very dangerous, and none of the other EVs that we looked at had any kind of design like this.
Talking about the significance of a company like Uber Elevate and their evaluation of this, from a commercial perspective, a company like Uber and their plans to get into urban aerial mobility seems to be extremely important to the commercial prospects of a product like EHang's.
Uber Elevate spent a half a billion dollars just last year. investing in this space. And you compare that to EHang, and EHang has an R&D budget of about $10 million. So where they've got a completely inferior product here. It's basically just a drone with a couple of seats in it with no R&D budget to compete with Joby, Volocopter, Bell, Archer, any of these companies. They just happen to make it to market first. And they're the EV play for anybody wanting to be in this space right now. And they've really played on that with 48 press releases in 13 months. 48 press releases. There's like no event that they don't make a big deal out of. Quite frankly, we think they've misled investors about their FAA approvals, which they have none of, or any approvals in Europe, which they have none of. Anything they have gotten are approvals for test flights in common corridors where everybody, you know, submitting the application fee can go fly your drone. This thing, you know, is not unlike a drone that weighs 5 pounds or 50 pounds. It just so happens it weighs like 1,000 pounds, but it's a drone. I don't see it ever carrying passengers in a commercial way.
And talk to me a little bit more about those press releases. You know, it's one thing to put out a lot of press releases if you do have something to talk about, but you know, you've indicated that some of them actually seem misleading. You know, they've had big launches where it almost looks like they're in a, you know, a NASA launch center, and things don't quite add up when you dig a little bit deeper.
They're absolutely fantastic at putting out videos of their flying drone, but when you really look into it, and especially their so-called launch center, it's a complete joke. I mean, you walk in and yeah, it looks like a NASA launch center. And they've got maybe 20 people sitting in front of computers with these huge NASA-like screens. Let's, you know, forget about the fact that, you know, what NASA did 30 or 40 years ago with those huge screens you can do with your iPhone today. It's all for show. The 20 people sitting there looking like they are NASA engineers are looking at a home screen on their computer. They're not doing anything. And by the time they actually do the test flight itself, which looked rickety at best, they bring somebody off camera, on camera, with a laptop.
Now, I bet all of our viewers are dying to see the launch of the world's first passenger drone. Derek, can you please show us how to launch this aircraft?
Yeah, so here comes our engineer.
Our EHang engineer hard at work preparing the launching of the 184.
Now you have all this commercial equipment that looks like you've got this big launch center, and you got some dude that walks in with a laptop and just kind of takes the drone off the ground at their R&D center, and there's nobody in the drone. They fly it around for a little bit, they set it back down, but this launch center it's a complete facade in my opinion. It's not unlike what we've seen in China for the last 10 years, right? I mean, do they make drones? Yes, they do. They have some. And by make, I don't necessarily mean manufacture from the ground up. From what we saw in their factory, they're simply assembling parts like a kit car kind of a thing. So they have drones. They have maybe 20 of them at their factory just sitting there and other places that they can show people. The same thing I could say about CBEH, China Integrated Energy, for those of you who have ever seen the China Hustle. I mean, yes, this was an energy company. Yes, it had smokestacks, and yes, it had offices, but it had no employees, and it wasn't operating until investors wanted to show up. And then you could see us filming them for several days. Smoke starts coming out of the smokestacks. Lights turn on. A bunch of employees show up. Busloads of investors get dropped off. Everybody puts on a very nice show. As soon as they get on the bus and leave, everything gets turned off. That's what appears to be happening here with EH. Walking into their factory, and consider this for a moment. Their main factory in Guangzhou had one security guard at the front. So what did we do? We just walked around the back and walked in and walked around their entire facility, five floors, for 20 minutes, filming everything. We did not see one employee working. We saw three or four employees as we were going into the facility unchallenged to, you know, thinking about protecting all this world-class IP. You can just walk in off the street. And yes, we saw some EH216s fully assembled, but we saw nothing that looked like manufacturing equipment. We saw no assembly line, nothing like you'd see at Joby or any of these other large eVTOL companies. Not to mention, you could never walk in off the street with any of these companies here in the U.S. like this. What kind of IP are they really protecting when you can walk in off the street and walk around their entire factory? There were no lights on. Like, I mean, I get it. I mean, if you're only going to pull in $3.6 million in cash last year, you got to be careful about the light bill. But even going up to the second floor, as the elevators open in the vestibule area, there's two half-built EHang 216s, or half-assembled, I should say, sitting next to some trash. Walk through the whole second floor, unchallenged. Third floor, unchallenged. The whole thing goes this way. And it appears to us, just like many of the other China hustles, it's a hustle.
And it's not just that location as well. They have a, talking about their media statements, they put out releases about a, you know, a new facility that you also went and checked out. Talking about what you saw on the ground there.
Yeah, so there's this new facility they say they're building in Yangfu. Of course, they're not building it. They have no CapEx budget. Their CapEx budget was $500,000. And we go to Yangfu, and we do see that there is a building that does have their name on it now. It used to be some stone wholesaler that was subsidized by the local government in Yangfu, which is, I guess, what's happening here with EHang. And it's 80% unfinished. It's supposed to have been finished end of this month or something like that. We were there a month ago, 80% unfinished. There are like 4-6 drones there, fully assembled, a couple of them just sitting on pallets wrapped up. There's not even a wrench there as far as being a manufacturing facility. There is nothing. Now, I'm saying in their main manufacturing facility in Guangzhou, they don't have an assembly line, they don't have advanced manufacturing equipment. In their new facility in Yangfu, they have zero, not even a hammer. So, you know, what they think they're doing there, I have no idea.
And you also went to the R&D facility, and what did you find there?
Well, the R&D facility is in a dilapidated area. It was like an old circus 10 years ago. It does exist. You can see it on one of their videos better. We actually, in this case, couldn't get past the gate guards, who were not interested in whether we were investors or not. But it looked like nothing you would think. It was just a rundown, bombed out Beirut. It was a terrible location. Who knows what they've got back there, but we couldn't get into it. You can see from satellite photos that they do have a pad where they can do test flights. But again, they have a drone. It's never going to carry human passengers autonomously. That's not going to happen for a very long time anywhere, even with the best in class. To think that you're going to have this discontinuous jump from a drone to no pilot to fully autonomous is ridiculous. Of course, we're going to have pilots to begin with to work out software kinks and things of this nature, rather than just putting people in a drone autonomously day one in the next year or two. That's not going to happen, as EHang would have you believe. Not the least of which, you're not going to be walking through 16 propellers to get into a drone. Anybody with piloted drone or not, is going to get into a much safer vehicle with much safer motors and much safer equipment to be used.
So even say, though, you know, the autonomy does happen and people are willing to overlook the safety issues, talking about the economics of actually using this commercially and how their math just doesn't quite add up.
Well, I mean, like, think about it. I mean, the thing can fly for 10 minutes. I mean, how much do you have to charge somebody to make that economically viable at, you know, $230,000 a unit or 1.5 million RMB. It's just not. And when you're not spending any real money in R&D, what's the plan? I mean, what's the plan for a better battery? It's one of the first things that the finance manager, Kun Shun, said to us. Like, this thing is old. It is outdated. You don't want it. We can sell you something else. The battery only lasts for 10 minutes. There are no economics of scale there. It could only fit two passengers without a pilot. And believe me, these would be two very small passengers. Like, you've got a 100-pound Asian lady trying to get in this thing, and it looks like she's taking up the whole thing herself. You're not putting a larger person like myself in this thing at all.
So on top of this autonomy story that they're telling, they're also talking about them really being a platform that covers the whole, you know, gambit when it comes to this new industry. Can you talk to me a little bit about, you know, what they're saying, and then also the experts that you've consulted, what they've come to the conclusion that maybe that just doesn't even work for companies as large as Uber?
This, by the way, should have already been finished, according to them in one of their press releases. The Haju ePort, where they would have, you know, end-to-end logistics, right? They have this, you know, three-story building, this ePort that you land on top of. They've got a great video of what this would look like. You take off, it's logistics center, it's repair, it's all in one. You know, Uber Elevate looked at this and they're like, you know, hey, this is going to cost, you know, $5 to $10 billion. So we're better off doing this as a collaboration with people than taking it on ourselves. Now, Ehang's story is they built this already, right? In the press release, they said we go to Haju, and there's nothing there. There's no permits even filed to build this building. It's just an elaborate show of this is what we could be, an elaborate rendering, an elaborate 3D kind of animation of what they could be, but it's all wishful thinking. Not the least of which, it's going to cost $5 to $10 billion, even in China, to put something like that together, which is why they haven't even attempted it. Although they say they've done it already.
You said they do have a nice little model, though.
They have a fantastic looking model in their office. I mean, it's so cute. You know, you just want to go up and say, wow, this is great. Look, if they make, you know, autonomous passenger carrying vehicles this big, then that model will come in handy. But for the real world, they're never going to have this ePort. They're never going to have the money. This is a stock promote. This is all about, you know, being first to market, getting a great valuation. I mean, look, they're a $5 billion company today, which is ridiculous. And, you know, this is more on their press releases, the idea of ETFs that are going to have all things that fly, which are great for some of the big movers coming into the space. United Airlines signing a deal with Archer. None of this has anything to do with Ehang. And nobody is picking up on Ehang. I mean, if you think about this, they're the first to market, right? You look at the passive institutional holders in this, they're almost none. I mean, these guys jump into anything right now. They have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. You're talking Fidelity, Vanguard, BlackRock, you know, they have a little piece of it, but almost none. They would be jumping into this thing. And that's not what I consider smart money, right? They don't go out and kick the tires and do fundamental analysis. But even they know to stay away from this.
Comparing, you know, I went and looked at some of the holdings. I think the largest of those holders doesn't even have 1%. And comparing to even some of the other companies we've talked about on the chopping block, that's really not even comparable.
You know who does have more than 1%? Kunshan. They're, you know, the company that's got all these contracts for 128 units over the next 9 years or whatever it is. I don't know how many, if any, have been delivered, but one, it's not going to be for 150 million RMB a piece like their first contract, or even 128 units at 1.5 million RMB a piece. This is working out for both of these companies, Shanghai Kunshan and EH, because it's a stock promote.
So, you know, just taking stock of where we are now, you have potentially shady related party transactions. You have accounting issues. You have misleading statements about their manufacturing processes. You have concerns from professionals in the industry about their technology and their safety. On top of that, though, the stock is up almost 40% this week, 300% on the month, and 700% since IPO. Who owns this thing, and why is the stock moving like this?
Well, I think retail, unfortunately, owns a lot of this thing. And these are the last people that I want to see, you know, get hurt by a stock promote. But unfortunately, they generally are the people that get hurt by a stock promote one way or another, because, you know, they're either invested personally or through a passive investment. And why it's gone up so much in the last couple of months is, as I've touched on, like United, the eVTOL space is a fantastic space to be invested in. Not enough of these companies have hit the market yet. Three or four of them are going to be public in the next few months, and they could be great plays. I don't know. We haven't really looked at them yet, but they're huge companies that have spent years and years building serious technology and IP, You can't just walk into their factory off the street, and it's going to be great. And people know that the flying taxi is coming and that it's going to be great. That's why they're investing in it. That coupled with knowing that ETFs are going to start just focusing on this space, that United Airlines is signing a contract, that General Motors is building their own with the Cadillac. That's the hype and why they're up. But it has nothing to do with their fundamentals. Their balance sheet is a nightmare. It's unbelievable. If you've ever looked at one, you're just like, what the hell is going on here? We've already talked about the accounts receivable that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. And they're just not very transparent about where their customers are and what they're doing.
One thing we haven't talked about are the legal issues within the PRC. I know that they're in the middle of a lawsuit right now. Can you talk to me about what's happening from a legal front inside China?
Yeah, Max, their legal issues are undisclosed as well. We obtained Chinese court records which show that EH equity may already be in serious jeopardy. Ehang Guangzhou, which holds most of Ehang's assets and operations, had 95% of its equity frozen by a Chinese court as a part of an ongoing lawsuit filed by one of EH's creditors. In other words, a Chinese court could liquidate EH's equity to repay the creditor and rendering the ADRs completely worthless. So American investors would be left with no legal recourse in the company or anyone else for their losses.
Yeah, and you know, how significant does the case have to be for a court in China to place that sort of hold on equity?
Well, the court has to see it with merit. I mean, it's China, you know, and I'll freely admit, I mean, who knows who pays who and how courts handle things. But, you know, there's somebody on the other side of this that is very, very serious about their problems with Ehang. And to freeze their equity is not a small thing. And it certainly should be disclosed right away. Whether you're a 20F filer or not, this is a material event and it should have been disclosed. And who knows? I mean, from what I've seen of Ehang and, you know, going to their factory and seeing nobody working, no real manufacturing products, assembly line, things of this nature. Yeah, it looks to me like, you know, somebody's got a very big problem with Ehang and their representations.
So, Dan, it seems like there are multiple angles that you can come at to determine that this company is a potential short target. Why don't you just summarize all the major bullet points that we've gone through today, and if there's anything we missed, now's the time.
In a sense, look, this is a stock promote not unusual in China, right? You find a counterparty that's willing to go along, that's a savvy investor in the space, and that understands. I'm not even sure that Kunshan, you know, isn't behind EH on this whole thing, and this is their public face to make money in the United States. But between the two of them, they seem to have one relationship, one sole disclosed customer who's now also a distributor, who, as we find out, is a competitor that doesn't want to sell Ehang's product. I mean, it's beyond fishy. And then you look at the financials. I mean, seriously, they collected $3.6 million last year in their first year. That's ridiculous. Even if they collected all of their reported revenue, it would be like $25 million, but they couldn't even do that. The company's going nowhere. They had a previous bankruptcy. This looks even worse. And that's what it comes down to. It's a model that you can put out there. They can make it fly, but to say that this is ever going to carry passengers autonomously here in the United States, in Europe, in Canada, is patently false. And those press releases that they're putting out saying as much are beyond misleading. You know, I believe that it crosses the line into fraud when you are saying that you have regulatory approvals with the FAA and others. It's ridiculous. Of course they do not. They show up for some test days and they make it seem like they've gotten some approvals. Well, those are not approvals. They're not going to have those approvals with their current product. They have no R&D budget to make a better product. Would have to be much better. They have no CapEx spend to build their e-port or to build new factories unless the government is subsidizing the whole thing. So Ehang has some explaining to do about what their real business is, what their real motivations are.
One thing we haven't talked about, Dan, is the risks to your outlook and the risks to the trade, and certainly in light of, you know, the risks that have been exposed recently in short selling, I think it's important that we talk about that. You know, what are the things you're most worried about?
I'm most worried about people losing money. I'm going to be fine in this either way, right? So I can manage risk. And I know a lot more about what's going on with this company than anybody else seeing this video. I understand where this is going to end. It could go up. Like, people could say, hey, here's an opportunity where, you know, somebody comes out with a short and we could buy it up. But this is a very, very different thing than GameStop. GameStop was not a fraud. GameStop was not over-exaggerating their business or their issues. They were, as a matter of fact, being completely honest about their issues. It's a very different kind of investment that you can get caught in. And, you know, the float is not quite as tight. When you talk about GameStop, you had all of these passive investors that were taking up most of the float and insiders holding 20% themselves. That's not the case here. So there's going to be a lot more free trading going on. A squeeze is not impossible, but it's going to be a lot harder, and you're not squeezing a company that is being honest with you. If that sits well with you, fine. Have at it. We'll all be fine. But anybody left holding the bag with this is going to be like that same investor that bought GameStop at $400. Where is it today?
I think that's a fantastic place to end it.
Max, thanks for having me. I look forward to being back soon. As a matter of fact, I will be back soon.